further. Can we have a motion to approve the minutes of March 12th?
So.
Second?
I was gonna say, you guys are the only ones that can do this.
Okay.
They don't have a quorum? We don't have a quorum.
No.
They really can't.
Okay, so we don't need to do that anyway then, okay. Any public comments?
Someone joined us. JP? Jen?
Oh.
How about any president? President's comments? I don't have any comments other than that Julia is out of the country, so she didn't get to join. Okay, so we will move on to Megan Harris.
Okay. So we were asked, this is actually Megan, I'm sorry.
I'm Megan.
Oh, should we introduce ourselves, Laura?
Yeah, yes, please do.
Okay.
Yes. Leanne, why don't you introduce your team?
Sure. I just lost my voice for 5 seconds. Hi, I'm Leanne Blanc, I'm the Population Health Manager, and I brought some of my team members today to showcase some of the great work that we're doing in Kenosha County. It was requested by some of our board members that they'd like to know what we're all doing. So Lori Peters is my supervisor for one of our team's parents as teachers. And we brought Megan Harris here, she's one of our newest staff that joined us in October for our maternal child health grant. And Sandale Nakuna is here with our CORI team, Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative. So they will talk about all their great work. And over to you two.
Yes, ma'am. Where are you from?
I'm from South Africa.
South Africa.
I was gonna say, where am I from? Illinois.
South Carolina.
Do I have an accent?
Yeah, I'm all up by you, I'm from Nigeria.
Okay.
Because when you see Kuna, I say, okay, Americans don't have that term. Okay.
Juan Torres, retired KUSD, and I'm a board member.
Dr. Rita Ventura, I'm a nurse practitioner with Children's Wisconsin, working in the child advocacy centers in Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties.
Karen Erstein, Health Department Admin Assistant. And do we have anybody else on from the?
Oh, Kayla came.
Kayla, do you want to introduce yourself, Kayla?
Turn it a little bit.
Hello, everybody. Are we doing introductions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, hi, my name's Kayla. I'm a registered nurse at a local facility here in Kenosha County. And my background is currently in infection control.
Thank you. All right, Lori Palmer.
Jennifer, can you introduce yourself, please, to our guests?
You bet. I'm Jennifer Fan, I'm from Corporation Council.
Thank you.
Good to go?
Good to go.
Go now.
Okay, so we were asked to come and talk a little bit about our maternal child health grant. We had an opportunity to realign the grant last summer, I guess it was already. And we chose a focus on perinatal mental health. We chose that because I also oversee a part of a home visitation program. And while we do.
Can you stop?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's wait for Dominique to get settled.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Afternoon. Dominique, can you just introduce yourself to our guests, please?
Hello, my name is Dr. Dominique Pritchett. I am a board member and private practice owner at Beloved Wellness Center.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we got all kinds of group coming.
So Leanne, maybe just start over with your introduction to your team. So Dominique can hear.
Sure. Yes. Dominique, I took your suggestion last time for that we'd like to have some of our program showcased. And so these are some of my team members from Population Health. And we have Lori Peters, Megan Harris. They're going to talk about our maternal child health program, which will probably be a little more up your alley. And then Sandale Nakuna, who is joining us from our Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative. Mm-hmm. And so they'll talk about their programs. And Lori was just getting started.
Yep. So we had an opportunity to realign our maternal child health grant to be more pay more attention to perinatal mental health issues. We chose this pathway because I also oversee part of the home visitation program. And while we do frequent depression screens and anxiety screens, we refer for counseling, a lot of our clients just don't follow through on the referrals. And so This gave us an opportunity to bring an extra person in and really dedicate some time and resources specifically for that cause. We hired Megan in October, and I'm going to just let her talk because she's got so many beautiful words.
Well, those are beautiful words as well. Thank you. So once again, I'm Megan. Hello, everyone. Since joining the team in October, it's been a quick rush of a lot, but it's been really good. I'll kind of go over the process of what the program is and what we offer moms, and let you know the process. Yeah. So basically, typically what happens is that one of the nurses or home visitors that Lori mentioned on the home visitation team will tell me about a mom that they think could use extra assistance. So that could mean she is looking for a referral to services regarding her mental health, or that could mean she just really needs someone else there to support her as far as her emotional, mental, physical, even well-being. With the topic of mental health and perinatal mental health, I always say this, but it's true. Everybody asks, how's baby doing? Let me hold the baby. Nobody's asking, how's mom doing? And let me hold mom. And let me hold space for mom. And I think that that's the basis of this program, is to make sure that mom has a space. Because with the home visitation program, we noticed that it was, okay, so how is little Johnny doing developmentally? When was his last checkup? Not, hey, mom, how are you feeling? Especially after that 6-week checkup after birth, nobody's really following up to make sure that it wasn't just check, check, check. She's fine. When in reality, she's struggling. So the way that we kind of work it is that, like I said, the home visitor will typically say, hey, I'd like for you to see this mom. We also just opened it up to the community slowly but surely with our first referral from WIC. And I will either tell the mom or I'll tell the home visitor that they can introduce me through the sheet that I provided for everyone, where I usually customize it and laminate it and put the mom's first name just to try and make it a little bit more personal. And this is just a little overview of what to expect from me. So whether that be just emotional, mental support, but also resource connection, but at the basis of it, it's personalized help. Along with that, if a home visitor has a referral for me, but they don't really know how to get in contact with me, sometimes I'll send them out this sign-up sheet that I believe was also provided. I'm not sure.
But it was online.
Okay, yeah, it was online.
It's in the packet that everybody has over there.
So they can follow this sign-up process, and it's very, very simple. Just putting your name and where you'd like to meet, whether that be home, whether that be community, and it's all private. Only I can see it on my end of the dashboard, and we'll go from there. Typically, meetings are really whatever the mom wants. When I say it's personalized, it is for each mom. I've had some visits where I met with a mom that doesn't often get to get out of the house. She has two little ones. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she thrives in the outdoors and in nature. And she's just often said that it's just too overwhelming to go outside. So we've gone outside and went to a local park and just talked the whole way through. And even just talking about the power of the sunlight, the power of being outside for our own well-being, but also accomplishing that goal of getting out, it was huge. And I could see the difference from when I got there to leaving. But like I said, sometimes it is just referrals. So I have noticed your organization before, and I referred one of the moms that I've spoken to before to your organization. And in total, I've done 3 referrals. Most of them, I should say 2 of them, just to be simpler, have asked straight up for a referral. They didn't really want to meet with me one-on-one. They just wanted access to therapy. Another mom kind of got there on her own, and she was like, you know, I think this is where I want to, the next step that I want. But who's to say that without the program that she would have reached that point? And yeah, I think that beyond the idea of referrals, people forget that a lot of it can be self-work. Mm-hmm. And it's not always talk therapy and medication like some people are taught to believe. There's a lot that you can do within. And I like to help guide moms with that. So some examples that I brought today are journals, which are very simple way to get into the idea of working with yourself. But that's not to say that journaling is everybody's thing. It's about finding what works for each mom. So for some moms, it might be journaling. For some moms, it might be reading and the affirmation of it's okay to have scary thoughts. It's okay to have these dark thoughts that you might not feel comfortable saying out loud, but you know need to be addressed. You know, sometimes it is something further than a journal, but more like a workbook. But oftentimes, for most of the moms that I've worked with, it's been an activity. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So one of the activities that I included in the packet is basically just a hierarchy of needs. So on, I believe it's the back of the pyramid side, mm-hmm. I introduce Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is basically just a concept of what humans need at a base level. So the concept is that without the bottom physiological needs, you can't reach the top of self-actualization. So I like to put it in perspective for moms that have no idea of where to even start, have no sense of identity or interests, that this is like an activity to bring some light into who they are or where we're starting. The activity is pretty simple. I also bring a whiteboard and I have them go in with the pyramid and kind of just sort the bottom. So I've adapted this to postpartum, but I adapt it even further to each mom that I talk with. So if they feel like something like warmth and support and rest are things that they accomplish, then they can put that at the top of the pyramid. But maybe it's something that even though they accomplish, they don't feel sturdy in. So maybe they'll put that in the top at red, in red. So kind of using color and placement to highlight where they are at mentally and physically and just in terms of all support that they can use. Another example of activities that I like to do is just a candle activity. So basically, I will have a set of candles and I talk a lot about the inner light that they have and the inner voice that they often hear. Because a lot of times when it comes to mental health, it's a lot of the inner voice. A lot of moms forget that they are either the flame or the wick, I like to put it. The wick gives light at its own expense, whereas the flame can give light and not diminish itself. A lot of the visits that I've done have been very hands-on. They've been very activity-based, game-based, but it's all based around helping moms learn not only coping methods, but learn guidance on how to go forth with themselves as their priority. And that doesn't mean that they have any less love for their child. It means that they love themselves and their child. And now for the fun stats. Since I joined in October of last year, we decided to kind of start right in January. So with quarter one ending as of last month, within quarter one, I had a total of 19 referrals. So that was spaced out with about 4 in January, 6 in February, and 6 in March. And I regularly saw 14 of those 19 clients. And then since April, I've already had 2 additional referrals that I'm seeing. And that totals for a total of 41 visits total in quarter one. So I do see the moms regularly and I do keep up with them, even if it's just virtual, but majority of the moms I've seen in person. So yeah, that's my spiel.
And then moving forward, I'll just talk about a minute or two. Moving forward, we've got plans to start some support groups. We're noticing that women are not really connected. They're not, they're kind of these islands of one, or if they've got a partner too, they don't have mom friends. They don't have anybody that they can connect with. So we're hoping in the beginning of May to start something. We'll begin with offering a tour of home visitation clients and our WIC, the ones we've engaged through WIC. But our grand plan at some point is to open it up throughout Kenosha County. We're not sure what that'll look like just yet, but that's kind of the direction we'd like to go.
Yeah. And that those groups will be focused on mom versus like your mom baby groups, where they really focus more on the baby.
Yep. Somebody will be there to help find the kids that come, you know, keep them busy, and it'll be very mom centric.
Be really interesting to see how many of those moms actually know how to make new friends and keep them.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about the most basic needs is, you know, that hierarchy isn't necessarily relational. We believe it is, but it can be attained, you know, in a different way. You know, in my practice, I have a lot of grown women. They're like, I don't know how to make new friends, you know, because we are in a high, fast paced virtual world and et cetera. So it'd be really interesting to maybe poke around with that question. So you want people there that have the intent of the group in mind, and we can't act like they don't bring other stuff. So it'd be really cool to get some information around that, is what is their understanding of friendships and support? Because it's a privileged assumption to believe everybody knows what that is.
Absolutely.
And you know how to protect that space.
Very true. Yeah, just the mom that I just met with yesterday for the first time, she had come to one of our planned events. We hold events for the women in our program, and at the events I have a table for MCH and a table for pregnancy, just kind of in that field to introduce moms who might not get a referral from, or I might not get them as a referral from the home visitation team, but they might want to reach out on their own. And she was telling me about how she used to be a social butterfly, and now since being a mom, she just doesn't know how to make connections. And I told her, I saw her talking to another mom at the event, and I told her I was just so proud of her, even for continuing that conversation, because that's huge. Like, it's not even just like, oh, I'm glad you talked to someone. It's that I'm glad you opened yourself to that potential of community. You know, you could have easily just been like, yeah, that's nice, and brushed her off, but you stayed there and you engaged with her, and that in itself shows me you want community, you want support, you want those friendships you talk about. And that was pretty cool in itself.
And how resilient too.
Oh, yeah.
Just be like, okay, I'm gonna put myself out there. It could flop. But it showed her resilience. So I'm very excited. You know, just all the warm and feels over here. Please let me know how I can support directly. I know you're gonna be offering the groups. I would love to offer my support directly.
For sure. Yes. Thank you.
That's amazing.
Any questions from the people online?
I had something. I think this is amazing. I just had a baby myself. I have a 3-month-old. And so the fact that this service is available in Kenosha County is super amazing. I will say that the organization I work at, as well as the organization that I gave birth at, I don't believe that this is included like with discharge education or anything for new moms. And I know you said this isn't quite available to like everyone in the county yet. Is that correct? You're not like asking to put your flyer in with like, you know, discharge paperwork with new moms or anything, right?
Not just yet.
Yeah, but right from the beginning.
But we certainly could get our home visitation program flyers in there.
Yeah.
For now. And then once we're ready to open groups, you know, to the bigger community, then most certainly we would do that as well.
If I can help at all, I'd be happy to definitely give the flyer, the information to the people at my organization. So.
Great.
What qualifications need to be met for participation?
So for in the program, the home visitation program, basically either pregnant or parenting, we can hold kids as long as families with kids as old as age 5. We prefer to engage them under age 1 if we get them postpartum. And then they need to meet one of the federal risk factors. And the most common one they meet is low income as defined by WIC.
Standards. And what are those other risk factors if that's not?
Gosh, off the top of my head, let's see if I can come up
with
that.
You can email it out. You don't want to put you on the spot.
Okay.
No.
I'm curious, is there a factor as far as like maternal postpartum depression as a factor or no? I think that that's I mean, you know, yeah. there's people in different income brackets that certainly suffer with that.
We have some.
I'm more embarrassed even, I think, to really admit that.
So we do have a few clients that don't have any of the risk factors. They were either referred to us by a physician or a counseling practice. And once we heard the story, it's like, absolutely, please come. If they want to participate, our clients can't all consist of that, but we can, we can.
You can increase that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't even, like, truthfully, because on the paperwork side of things, the screenings that the home visitation team does for moms that kind of leads them to referral stage, I handle as well. And a lot of the moms that I see, you can't tell that they're in need of support just by a screening. So like, it's not always a matter of like, oh, if you didn't reach this number on a screening, you're not going to be referred to Megan. Like, it's, if you need support, Megan's here. That's what I want it to be, at least.
I'm thinking about a lot of the clients that I see, as far as, you know, you have moms with newer kids and there's domestic violence and abuse in the home, that, you know, they certainly need that, you know, additional support to start talking about their issues. So.
Yeah, Megan, in your meetings or the initial screening with the home visitation person, is there education about when they might need help?
So I typically start by kind of saying that the basis of, you know, I am not a licensed therapist or psychiatrist. I am not here to be the end. I'm here to be the bridge. So then we start to talk about what it means to need help in terms of someone that I am not, and what it means to have a referral to, whether it be a therapist, whether it be a psychiatrist, whether it be looking into medication, or whether it means that they are willing to do the work themselves, because there is so much stigma around even just seeing someone. So what it means to do that work yourself and kind of the limitations that might come with. Every starting meeting, every first visit, I like to just go over the basis of why I'm there and what I can provide, and remind them of what they can provide themselves with support. I never want it to be something that's like, oh, you can't feel better, you can't be to a place of well-being without me, because it's all in them. But a lot of times we need that guidance, we need that helping hand. I hope that answers.
And more, thank you. And it does start with the identification and maybe a shared understanding of what help is, what does it look like, and when do I know I need it? So I love that you are not misrepresenting yourself and, you know, saying all of those things. And people, even before I became a doctor, people were like, hey, doc, I'm like, I'm not a doctor yet. So you're a huge conduit for us and in my world, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So I wanted to chime in real quick. I know I popped in late, but I do really like what I've heard so far about the program, and like the same sentiments of everybody else. I love to offer my support any way we can to expand this program and get it out to more moms, because I think this is huge.
Kenny.
And I'll add one last thing. I know use the language mom, mom, mom over and over, but Lori and I are actively in the topic of opening up to dads, because although it's not super common that I will go on a visit and dad is interested or like engaged, I have two dads so far that are, you know, like, oh, why can't I get some attention too? Because that's definitely a huge need as well. So always expanding, always hoping to expand.
Thank you. Okay, next. Sandra with the Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative.
Yeah, Sandalay.
Sandalay, sorry.
Okay, and I'm going to turn him a little bit so the online people can kind of see Sandalay.
Well, I just want you all to realize that this Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative is an element of our SAMHSA grant. Mm. So our SAMHSA grant is in its third of 4 years. And it's two initiatives, our Narcan training and establishment of our Kenosha overdose response.
So Laura just took what I was going to say. That's okay. So yeah, we've had this funding since September of 2021. Zondale joined us a year ago. And we're in the third of the 4 years. So we're kind of excited as to where we've landed right now. And Zondale is going to show all of the cool stuff that we've been doing. And I saw Kendall bring one of his staff members bring down some show and tell things too. So our first goal is to reduce the number of opioid related overdose by training everyone that we can on Narcan. So this is kind of a continuation of a former grant that we had through the state. We had a 5-year grant just on Narcan specifically. So the Narcan team's been around for a while now, and our theme is Save a Life, Get Trained, Carry Narcan. And you've seen it everywhere from hand sanitizers to pens to billboards. And so that message has really been drilled into the community. And then our second goal, which was new with this grant, was develop and implement a comprehensive prevention campaign that addresses the overdose survivors' needs and family members' needs with prevention education. So,
and Laurie, is this separate from the Vivitrol?
Oh, that's our medication assisted treatment. So that is in partnership with this. Zondale can maybe touch on that a little bit on how the survivors get connected with Krista with that. So
yeah, I can. Yeah, it is separate, but we're related. We brought it in, or we had talks to be part of that, or that to be part of Corey because we saw the need out there. But what Leanne is describing, so it's two arms. So I'll have to separate them for now because you have the Narcan part of it, and then you have the Corey part of it. So the Narcan part of it, this is us. We have two public health strategists who are going out into the community. We provide Narcan training and Narcan distribution to all the community partners and members within the county, including whether it be the police, the fire department, or Hazen University or Carthage. So we just provide that. And then we also do KCDC distribution, whether it is getting new information or whether it is getting more Narcan into them. So those are the partners that we work with. But anybody can walk in here and give us a call and say, hey, I'm here to be trained for Narcan. We will go down and train that individual. There's no requirements. And individuals, you don't have to be somebody who's struggling with substance use or using. You can be a parent, a friend, a sister, or anybody else who's interested. Because the idea with the Narcan, it is not necessarily for individuals who are using, but it is for them in a sense that if you overdose, you can't use it on your own. So we encourage individuals, whether you, your spouse, your friend who does not use substances, get trained, carry Narcan. If you lose it, we'll give it back to you. If you know somebody who needs it more, give it to them and then we'll give them back. Everything that we do with those individuals or when we train, it is confidential. So when somebody comes to us, we don't ask them why they need the Narcan. The only thing that we ask is whether it is for them, if somebody else. You don't need to tell us it is for my brother James who's using coke or heroin. No, we don't need to do that. Unfortunately, we ask that question because it's a grant. So there's also a statistical part that we have to report to the federal government. So the second portion of it, this is the Kenosha Overdose Response Team, this is the CORI team. We have a partnership with the fire department, Kenosha Fire Department, recently partnered with Aurora, and we have Oakwood Clinical Peer Support Specialist. And what we do, and then the MAT part, which I'll add in a little bit, what we do with that, we respond to individuals who have suffered from a non-fatal opiate overdose. When that happens, we get the information from our partners at the fire department that James Small has overdosed on this day, on that day. When we get that information, we always follow up within 48 to 72 hours. The reason being, sometimes an individual overdoses yesterday. When we go to their house today, we found out they are still at the hospital, they're incarcerated, or they're just homeless, or they are somewhere else. Because we've also witnessed that sometimes when individuals overdose, let's say you are in an apartment and you overdose there and the police were called and the fire department, sometimes they get kicked out. If they live in the trailer park, if they live with a spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend, sometimes they get kicked out. So then we have to locate them. And also sometimes when they use from one point and they drive to another point, but they overdose in between, then they get incarcerated. I think it's driving under the influence.
Yeah,
something like that, but they get incarcerated. So what we do, we go to wherever the individual is. You have a home, but you want to meet at the gas station, we're going to go there. You want us to come to your work, we're going to go anywhere you want us. We really meet individuals where they're at. If somebody doesn't tell us where to meet them, we take all the information that was given to us by the fire department, we follow that address. But now, because we've witnessed that, sometimes the address we get is not up to date. Before we go, our two public health strategists will go and find the other address or another address that is in the system. So we go to see, one, is the individual incarcerated? And number two, does this address check out? Then number three, can we verify this address through the Wisconsin immunization record? Then once we've done all of those, and then we go out on a run. The home visits, we call them a run. So Michelle is one public health strategist and Ken is one public health strategist. Kenosha Fire Department sends the information to us. Michelle receives the information that Joe Small has overdosed on this day. She takes that information, relays it to the Kenosha Fire Department to say, do you have a team that can respond to this run? They say yes. She relays the same information to our peer support specialist at Oakwood. When everybody responds to Michelle to say yes, we have a team that is ready. The fire department at this moment, because how big they are and also the rotations they do, they normally detect the time to us. So they will say, yes, we have two individuals who can go out at 11 a.m. Then we send an email that says the run is on this day at this time. So we have all the individuals that we are going to go to, because sometimes it's not just one, it's not two, sometimes it's multiple, like today it is three. I have to stress that the email and the communication between us and those organizations is encrypted. It is confidential because it has people's identifying characters, such as name, your date of birth, and your address and the telephone number. So it is only between us and those organizations. Then when the run is on, fire department will come here, the health department, because we have a van that we all go into. Our van does not say anything. It is doesn't say public health, doesn't say Kenosha, nothing. It is just a plain, regular van. And the reason we did that on purpose is still to protect that identity of an individual we're going to visit. So now we have two fire department personnel with us, both EMS. And the reason we have two is because of safety. Another reason is because they know the terrain pretty well. They're also known in the community and also respected in the community. One public health specialist strategist will be in the van with them. We pick up one peer support specialist at Oakwood. So now we have four individuals in the van and four is a crowd. But the public health strategist does not leave the van. And the reason is being, one, we need the public health strategist there to gather information as it happens. And also we are we're the custodians of the grant. Then number two is so that when that link that is needed now between MAT and the individual who suffered a non-fatal overdose, then the public health strategist is there to establish that path and that contact to MAT and the nurse practitioner. When we pull up at an individual's home, the two fire departments personnel and one peer support special will exit the van into the house of an individual we are visiting. The two fire departments check the surroundings, very discreet. But they will knock at the door. And when somebody comes out, then they will introduce us. But if we are looking for John and somebody opens the door, we don't go ahead and say, well, we're here because John overdosed last night and we're looking for John. No, we're looking for John, right? You are not John. We're going to turn your business, right? If John is here, then you can get John to us. And then the public, the fire department will introduce the peer support specialist from Oakwood. And then they will engage in a conversation. They will ask whether they can come in for privacy or step aside for privacy. But then the fire department at that time moves away. So now it's between the peer support from Oakwood and the individual who overdosed. And then they have a conversation there. Now, let's say this individual is very open to everything that we're presenting, because when we go to this individual, we have resources and we don't push one resource over another resource. We have where you can get treatment, where you can get counseling. Do you need help with A, B, C, and C, and D? We have all of those, but we don't push anything to this individual. What our goal is to prevent the next overdose from happening. And the ways we do that is by bringing all the resources we have, use these resources as a bridge. We'll hold your hand if you want us to hold your hand, but you're going to have to do the walking. We'll show you the direction. So now let's say John is open into everything and say, can you help me with treatment? Or can you help me with Suboxone? So now this is when the MAT program comes in. So we'll say, yes, we have MAT that works with us. This is how they do their work. This is what they have. But you have a nurse practitioner who needs to do screening, because we have Suboxone, we have Vivitrol. So the nurse practitioner will have to do the screening to see which channel fits you or which channel you want to take. Then we can do telehealth while on the field, and they can talk to the nurse practitioner and then take it from there, where the nurse practitioner can say, can you get here? And the idea is to get individuals on the field same day visitation and treatment with the nurse practitioner. So once that is established, then the nurse practitioner will take it from there, and then we will pull back from that. But if they need, sometimes they will say, I need transportation. So we try to see if they have any, we have bus tickets, but we try to ask them, can you call this person? Do you have a friend? Can somebody drop you off? So we try to encourage them to check out other resources they may have to come to us, but we are going to be here. So sometimes the population we work with needs a little bit of reminder. So that's another thing that we do. We'll call individuals and say, did you make your appointment? What can we do to help you, right? And we don't really try to intervene once they get the appointment or the treatment with the clinician here. The goal of that, what Krista does, is to stabilize the individual until they can do a warm handover into a facility where they can be seen for a longer period. Now, let's say an individual is incarcerated who overdosed. The peer support specialist will make contact with that individual at KCDC, and they will follow up to go see this individual. So the only difference between the visitation in KCDC and the home is that with KCDC, you're only seeing the peer support specialist. On the field, you're seeing the fire department and the peer support specialist. With the KCDC, we used to say, see the individual two times. That was the limitation. But we learned that at some point in time, some of the individuals who are incarcerated after an overdose, they don't have anywhere to go back to after they get released. And sometimes where they can go back to is where they don't want to go back to. That's where it got them in there. So the more our peer support specialists go there, these feelings and stories start coming out to a point where our clients will ask them to come back again. So then we extended the amount our peer support specialists can go and do the visitations. We don't want it to be a prescription. We want it to be case by case. We did have a story that ended up pretty in a fatal situation like that, where at the end of the visitations, the individual expressed why she would like for us to come back again. And we kept going, we kept going, we kept going. So that's what we do when we go and visit the clients. If we don't find you, if you're not home, you're not incarcerated, we're going to try to find you to see if you're homeless. We're going to call the shelters. If we can't find you anywhere, we don't just stop. We'll talk to our partners to see if they know who you are. When I say our partners, you know, shelters, you know, and we'll just try to find you.
So I got the two. Then I got clients.
This then is got, the door hanger that we leave.
Again today too. If there's nobody so I got at it home. Again at 5 to close.
Are you on a mute? We're hearing some conversation.
So this door hanger, it's pretty plain. Here's a number. And this number will be answered either by Michelle, by Kendall, or by myself. And once again, as you can see, it doesn't say Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative for the identity. And when we go on the field, another thing that we always stress to the team is that we're not just looking for the client to overdose, right? That client we're looking for, that's a key member. But also when we get into the house, if there's individuals there who seek our services, we'll provide them. If there's people who share with us that they need A, B, C, and D, and we have that, we'll provide that. March last year, we went out on an overdose on a 15-year-old. And when we got to this house, she was still at the hospital. Before we left, the mom came to us and said she also is struggling with substances and she needs our help. So we ended up creating that bridge for the mom. And that goes to show also the age spectrum of our clients. We don't only see 40-year-olds or 50-year-olds. It is all over the place. The youngest was that 15-year-old. We've seen 70-year-olds because sometimes individuals will overdose on medication that is prescribed by the medical doctor. Grandma had a hip surgery, forgot that she took a medication, takes it again, overdoses. So that's why when we go to the homes, we always provide services, whether it is Narcan training, giving individuals Narcan who are there, and that's who we deal with. When we go to homes, we leave a bag like this, especially if we find the individuals. Sometimes we do find individuals and they say they want nothing to do with us. We respect that. And we walk away, we leave our contacts, we leave the peer support specialist contact, and we tell them there is no limit as to when. Just because we saw them today doesn't mean they can call us. They cannot call us 5 months later. They can. So if you don't want to talk to us, fine, we'll leave something. But if your girlfriend is at home and she's telling us you're not there, we'll come back. So we'll always come back. If we go to an individual's home and we can't find the individual, we make at least 3 attempts. Last week, we went to see a lady. We couldn't find her. So today, we went back to her house. And next week, we'll go back to her house. And then we'll seal it by then. But behind the scenes, when we do that, the peer support specialists from Oakwood are also making phone calls to this individual. The dangerous thing about our clients who become destitute or become homeless is the fact that at some point in time, they're going to be recycled. We'll see them again. So we're trying to prevent that. So we always leave Narcan and we leave a booklet that is full of resources from the behavioral health down here. So here they have all the resources they may need. And we also, the new things that we're leaving are fentanyl test strips, because we are trying not to take any chances. We had a 27-year-old male last year overdose, went to his house, and he said he just smoked weed. And we said, but you overdosed. And he said, no, I just smoked weed. I just smoked too much. I said, okay, fine. We left. Following week, same situation happened, but his weed was laced with fentanyl. So now we're not taking any chances. We provide fentanyl. If you don't want them, fine. We tell you where to get them. We got Narcan. You don't want it? Fine. We'll tell you where to get it, how to get it. There's no limit. If you don't need it, you don't need it. But if you need it, it is there.
I have a question about your Narcan trainings. Do you go out places to do it, or is all the training take place at the health department?
It's both.
Both.
Okay. You call us, you say, I have 5 members in my organization who like to be trained in Narcan. We're going to go. You tell us it's outside the normal hours, 6, 7 p.m., we're going to go.
Okay.
I'd say 90%+ of it is they go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 There's very few that we have a video that one of his team members created in English and Spanish. So people can watch the video online and show up here in the building and said, I saw the video. I need Narcan. And that's as simple as that.
Oh, okay.
So there's really not anything super complicated about getting Narcan when they come here. But a lot of it is going out to bigger groups at all of our local colleges.
I would say too, a huge success that happened last year was that we got the Compassion Unified School District trained.
The police department and the school district were both within the first month, the first month in the last year. It was super big.
So after that, there was a 17-year-old, I think, that overdosed.
Yeah.
Indian trail. It was after that event that we were allowed finally to get in there and get some training going. So there were many, many people in the district that.
So that's what we do. Hopefully, as time goes by, what we're trying to do now is to explore how we can work with families who have family members who have experienced an unfatal overdose. At this moment, we are throwing out ideas there. We're not really sure how to come around it, but we do notice that sometimes our survivors live with mom and dad, and sometimes mom and dad also need some resources and education and prevention strategies and communication strategies. So we are exploring that at some point in time.
You had a fiance, right?
Yes.
You want to tell that story? I think that's an interesting story.
Are you talking about the one the fiance didn't know that the fiance was using? Yes, we did have an overdose, and I think he was at work, and when we went there, he didn't know. He lived with his fiance, and they were engaged, but he didn't know anything. He didn't see anything, no signs, until the overdose happened. So that's that ties to another phase of what we are trying to do to educate about stigma. Right, because now you have two people living in the same house, one is using, one is not, in an overdose, you know. So you ask yourself, what could be some of the reasons that I don't tell my partner that I'm using? Right, I'm scared, I'm ashamed, or it is a stigma. So, because we've also seen that sometimes the stigma prevents our clients from seeking services, from going to access services that are available to them. And
do you want to also share that we have vending machines?
We have all kinds of stuff going on. So Sandali started off managing one grant and now he has three. So we just keep piling more on his plate. So we were able to apply for a vending machine grant last year, and looks like we're going to have the opportunity to reapply this year for more funding. And so we were able to get two vending machines. One's at Crisis at, my goodness, 1202 60th. I think I memorized that address correctly, and I don't memorize the other one at the Sharing Center out west of the eye. That one's outdoors. Crisis is indoors. We're about 2 months into our vending machines, and we're gathering data to see if this is where they should be in the community, what people are using out of them. Currently in the vending machines, we have Narcan. We have medication lock bags. We have fentanyl test strip kits. So not just the strips, but we have little water and little scoops and stuff so they could test their drugs right there. We have hygiene kits, and we're also getting the DoTerra disposable bags where people can actually pour water and their medications into the bag, seal it up, throw it away. So that'll all be available in our machines. And then Sandali also manages the overdose response. What is it called? I just lost the OFR, Overdose Fatality Review Team.
Yes.
So
with the management of all those grants, it is that, I might be overstepping, but is that more than enough for one person, or is there extra staff that's needed?
Well, he has a partner in me, so I do all of the, nitty gritty stuff. So I have 10 grants that I manage, and three of them are under him.
You're 50, you know, expansion. You can do 50 grants.
So you
have more, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, because one of the things I think about, you all are on the ground, and you all are our eyes and ears in the community. And so I always worry about you all burning out. So you say, oh, we gave them another grant. Like, oh, that's 3 grand.
And they kind of all. Yeah. So the vending machines is one grant. So that one's managed by one of his staff members. The overdose fatality review is another grant. And the team comes together in this room specifically every other month to look at a fatal overdose that happened and what could we do differently in the community to make sure that doesn't happen to another person.
So team-driven grant management.
So it definitely, all those three grants are all interconnected to substance use prevention. I wouldn't do like, and the two grants that Lori manages are, you know, the Parents as Teachers grant with home visiting connected with our maternal child health grant. We always try to make things make sense for teams too and not be like, okay, you're going to manage the pool sanitation, you know, that kind of stuff and this, which don't even really go together.
Yeah.
So if there is a second or third grant that a staff member needs to manage, they always have a team supporting them. So he's got two team members. Megan is a one woman kicking butt show here, but he's got a whole team of home visitation nurses and public health strategists. There are 15 on that team total that all support each other. So I think we do a pretty good job.
As far as your OFRT, do you review all fatal overdoses or do you just pick one and look at it?
We pick. So we
wonder if you'd have a better ability to look at trends if you were, you know, reviewing more, you know, like, these are all the fatal overdoses that occurred in the last 2 months, you know, just to look for commonalities. And
I think, you know, they work with like the medical examiner's office to kind of pick whatever case that is going to be looked at. So this Thursday we have one. And usually the case has to be closed by the police department. It has to be closed by the medical examiner's office. So it's not always something super recent. It's not like, okay, this is something that happened last week. We're usually reviewing a case that happened last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I see.
Back in terms of what is closed that we can use, because I think that they have to send their cases to Milwaukee and then they come back, so it takes them, the turnaround takes a while. And you're right, we have looked at a case one time that had a very big pile so that we can work with everything that's different, but we're told we can't because the case was open even though it was a year long. It was.
And is that the DA's office that puts that?
Yeah. So the DA's office.
Get permission.
I know that we kind of ran into that the child abuse cases as well, so that we've had to overcome that barrier.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it means a little bit more if we can look at things that are more recent. And I'm just thinking that in, you know, overdoses, when you're looking at, okay, geez, we had 6 this month, you know, that to try and find some commonalities that might be, you know, more effective as far as the public health, you know, vision of, you know, trying to look at something after the fact. Or
and the commonality usually boils down to the drug and or how many. So the bottom line with all of this is you must assume these days that fentanyl, it's in marijuana, it's in everything. And now we're starting to see more silence. So it's just,
Seeing that information? Are we getting, you getting that information a year later after everything is closed that now xylazine is more common? Or is that something that you're going to be notified of?
No, because we have to wait for it to be closed.
It takes
at least 9 months.
Kind of new vaccine. You know, what strain is it this year?
Yeah,
by the time you get around to it, that one's long gone.
Right, exactly. It might diminish the you know, the impact you could have.
Yeah.
And from a public health perspective, by
I imagine folks have faced this. They are facing this. What is being done about this root issue?
Mm-hmm. This, trying to get Narcan into the hands of everybody.
In terms of data, tracking trends and all that, so the solution is just keep pushing Narcan, but what happens concurrently about this concern that the trends or the data is getting to us a year later?
Has I don't think there's anything we can do with that because the drug and toxicology, so unless we can get faster turnaround from Milwaukee.
And we can always meet with Patty to talk through that.
You know? I mean, when they're pretty much aware that it's a drug overdose, at least, you know, to start thinking about compiling some of that information sooner. And again, how are you going to have to wait an entire year to see if, you know, your initiatives with Narcan are actually effective?
Absolutely.
You know, which, you know, you shouldn't have to wait that long. If you've gotten it into however many places, are you seeing a decrease? Are you, you know, is there like a local area that's, you know?
Yeah. Well,
that's true.
So with the overdoses,
toxicology part is the problem because it takes forever to come back. But some of the trends we look into, especially when we get this report that six people died, right? Let's say we recognize so-and-so. What some of the things we're looking at, we treat everything as if fentanyl is involved. That's what we're doing now. And on top of that, we're treating it as if now fentanyl and xylazine are involved. So some of the trends in between we're looking at are social, right? So the individuals who overdose tell us a little bit more about them. So for example, we know that when individuals are being released from incarceration, the likelihood of them overdosing once they use is pretty high. So now we like look at the trend. Are these the people who were released? And if we see people that died in the same household, we want to know what was going on in that house. Is this a get-together house? Is this a house where they sell? So we try to look into those. And we always, for example, we did an OFR head. Two individuals passed away in the same household. So, and there was one person who was a witness to both of these. So now in my team, in my mind is what's going on to that in that house? Do these individuals know each other? What is the relationship with her, with these two individuals? And we work with the police department to identify that. But we found that there was nothing about the house. It was just the common... it was not even a drug house. So, it was just a common friend.
But are you getting that data out here later is what I'm asking. No. Okay, so you are getting that data up front. You just can't review it.
We're not doing the official review. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, with a big
so again, I'm just showing you is once. Okay, yeah, because I'm just thinking too. If you're looking at like, you know, again to like look at geographic area as well as you know, are you plotting those out?
So we have an epidemiologist. I think you guys have met Dan, but we're happy to bring him.
No, that's what I'm saying. You have somebody here. Gwen does such a good job with that.
Yes.
You know, so that you're looking at the geographic, and are you looking at, you know, just other. I mean, obviously, if you can't do a deep review until a year later. But again, to be sure that your response is being as effective.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, without being able to look at data sooner than a whole year.
Right.
You know, that's
absolutely. I agree with you.
From the survivors, I think, is the ones that we're able to help more and do some more boots on the ground stuff now. I think when we first went out, our very first quarry run, we ended up, you know, bumping into, this person's incarcerated. All right, well, that can't be the end of the story. What's next? So then we made sure that the Oakwood team had access to KCDC. And yes, they did. Okay, they went through all their background training and they went and be able to go in there. And like Sandalay said, we first started going and doing two visits. Okay, that wasn't enough. Let's do more. This person needs more help. So I think tweaking and quality improvement constantly with this program is what we're doing that we can manage. Yes, once the person's passed away and we don't get to, you know, close that case and everything and really look at that for a year, that's one piece of it. But I think what we're doing is as much as we can.
There's been it's just continuous quality improvement as we've gone through this since we kicked it off.
Mm-hmm.
They're incarcerated. Make sure that when they're released, they have Narcan in hand.
Right. That's a new thing in the past year.
So all the little things as we go through these and meet the different clientele and where they're located, we've made little improvements to assure that because a lot of people fail once they're released and they just end up being reincarcerated because it's easier for them, or they use again right when they get out because they don't have the resources to do anything else but use.
Yeah. Are you seeing a reduction in that 72-hour window of relapsing for those who did get Narcan?
I don't think we have that data yet, but that's good to idea to gather all
that. What do you think the proportion is of cases you actually hear about through the fire department to those that are utilizing the Narcan you've given out and are calling 911? You know, do we The problem is, any idea about that kind of stuff? I mean, I know that you can't get really accurate data, but I'm just wondering, is there some sense of that?
On our Narcan boxes, we have a QR code, so they can scan it and be able to let us know if they've used Narcan, so that we can say, hey, you need some more. It's really few and far between that are really letting us know that they've used it or that they need more. Or
what about those that come back from? But if they're using a vending machine, then that's going to be anonymous, correct?
Correct. Yes. That'll be anonymous. Yeah, and the people that are coming back for more, we do have a question. Did you use it? And that's why you need it replaced. And we don't ask any more information on that, but we can check that too.
But so, most of them will say, I gave it to somebody who is a user. So we don't have many people who say, yeah, use it on John Smith. It's most like
names are necessarily. I'm just saying that, like, we have a sense of, you know, that data that's really hard to capture because, you know, it's unknown to professionals.
Yeah.
True. And there's going to be data that we are never going to have because we don't want to be a hindrance. So hence, when individuals we visit, where they overdose or they use, we're not interested to know what they use or what they don't use. So another thing is, one of the hardest things is to track the usage of this. We're promoting using Narcan to revive an individual. So most of the time, and or the few times that people have told us they've used this, like, oh, I forgot to tell you guys, right?
And it's like, okay, the stories.
Yeah. You use it on somebody, yes. And also another tricky thing about the overdoses we respond to, we're not the only ones distributing Narcan. So now we may not know whose Narcan is that. And I think for me and my team is like, okay, awesome. Narcan was used. It's non-fatal now.
But it's the fire department, the police department. It's a team effort to get this. You get the counter, you can get our vending machines.
Is there a question at exiting from KCDC or KCJ where they're tracking it in their system if they were given Narcan?
Yes.
Also, is there a question at intake at KCJ whether they use Narcan or like gathering incoming data?
I don't know incoming, but I know I can check in with Eddie. Yes, I know coming out. Yes. And also one of the things with him, with KCDC, is that this, we want it to be accessible to everybody living, not just when they live on Saturday, everybody gets out on Saturday. So now everybody who lives has a choice of picking this. As a matter of fact, we are giving KCDC more Narcan than we have been giving them because of the turnaround of people coming and out, to a point where I had to ask Michelle, our public health strategist, why, what changed? Because I was interested to see, is there a trend? Now we're giving them more Narcan than we used to give them. What is going on? Are they incarcerating or releasing more people at certain points, at certain intervals, you know? But at the same time, I was like, it's a good problem to have. That means like a lot of people are having Narcan. But I can check in and get back with you to see if that is the question going in.
So do the Live Free program. Our staff are out educating quarterly on the clients at KCDC that are going to be released within a certain period of time. So they're educating them on all the programs that we have out in the community. I know Lori's team goes out there as well.
Yeah. I worked at KCDC and KCJ for nearly 8 years. Okay. And, you know, I even think about like their work release and our work crew. So are there, you know, other gaps where people could be getting it to take it out to distribute or to have on them? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know if they come in testing positive on anything with work release, they're off of it.
Yeah.
But I think overall, it really excites me, you know, as a former addiction specialist, it really excites me to hear the efforts that are going on. And it is a hell of a feat to fight. Mm-hmm. And so sounds like a lot of moving parts. And you're right, it's like, you know, it's forever changing, but yet there are things that just need to be constant no matter what trends we see. Absolutely. You've got to keep pushing what we know is effective, who used it, who has access to it. Those numbers are always going to be so ambiguous and uncertain. And I just want to just acknowledge the efforts y'all are doing. And I think since you've come on, it sounds like there has been momentum with this grant and some information that is, you know, tangible.
Absolutely.
And with your oversight and stuff.
That's okay. And we have two state conferences that Sondale is presenting at. He will be at the Wisconsin Public Health Association conference at the end of May and at the Opioid Stimulants and Trauma Summit. They're doing a panel discussion. So the fire department, Oakwood, and Krista from the health department, as well as Sondale, will be presenting at the state level. So we're really proud of them.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so
excited about that.
More photos to come.
Is this our 2-hour meeting?
One and a half.
Okay, we're at 90 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, we're at 90 minutes. Yeah. Does anyone have any questions that's online? I don't want to ignore you guys. Yeah. Quiet.
Okay, so health officer's reports.
So at the last meeting we had, it was recommended that the monthly county executive report that I send out monthly also gets distributed to the group. I, by this time, usually would have done a March one, but because I was off last week, I have not done that one yet. So
it's partially done. My portion is done. We get to do yours.
So, but the last one I did, I reported on in February. So, when we meet again, what I'll do is Karen will send that to you in advance, and then you can just ask me any questions from that report instead of me just sort of reading it off to you. I don't think there's really anything new and big since we met a month ago. I can think of
interviews for some
new team members. I guess that's like probably that. The largest thing. I have filled my. I think I may
be updated. Here last time.
I filled my my open position as a clinical services manager with an internal candidate, Gillian Redman. She was our communicable disease supervisor. She will be a fine fit for me for that position. So we currently have her position open, and we have two internal candidates that we're going to be interviewing for that position by the end of this week. And one of those two internal candidates, I'm certain will most likely take that position, which would then will just open up
one more internal. Keep just recycling.
Yeah. But you know, overall, we have since I started here, we've had quite a bit of turnover, but I think for the most part, it's been opportunity turnover. And we've got some great employees in the health department, and I feel like it's a healthy feel for the most part. We've had some culture discussions and some things just because there's been, you know, lingering, you know, it's just been a turnover in a couple of different health officers. And so I really just think they didn't know what to expect of me. So we just got it all out in the open and talked about it. And so I'm hoping that we're pretty close to maybe some status quo in our leadership and staff and sort of feel good movement going forward.
What is the demographic makeup of the staff?
Ooh, Lori, let's see if she knows it.
You'll get back to me.
Yeah,
I'll get back to you, but I'd say it's changed. I have 3 Spanish-speaking folks in the clinic. The clinic, since I started here, has grown immensely. Mm-hmm. We used to have 2 public health techs at the front desk and 2 nurses. We now have 3 medical assistants and 5 nurses and our nurse practitioner. And her practice has grown immensely. And of those, it is a diverse group, 3 Spanish speakers. One African American, and Christine is multi-generational, so.
And I think it goes without saying that question is not ever put anyone on the spot, but yeah. It is intended to be to make sure that we're intentional, that we're in representation of the community serving.
Based on what you're seeing here,
Yeah, we're getting better.
This is a very diverse group from when I started.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting better. Oh, yeah.
So whose definition of diverse?
Yeah, yeah. That's the other thing.
So
yeah.
Where we started.
Yeah.
You know what? I wouldn't say it was necessarily intentional. We've been very lucky to have the right folks present, and it just so happened that that's how it turned out.
Can you argue with that?
I'm going to say in the clinic, though, the advantage of having three Spanish speakers, it's out in the community, and our volume has grown 21% in the last year. So, you know, the community knows that we can speak to them, and it's been beneficial for us.
What happened to the DEI position? What's her name?
So
she
you're looking at her right now. So
yeah.
So through the Maternal Child Health Grant.
Okay.
And we were able to choose between 8 objectives, and the objective that we thought fit best with our needs for the team, because we were seeing a lot of needs in our perinatal.
She resigned.
Yeah. So she resigned, and then we ended up restructuring that, and Megan got hired to do perinatal mental health.
Right. So where does DEI fit in that?
Where does DEI fit?
Yeah.
DEI fits overall in our entire health department.
Yeah. So
it's
we're not having
it's written into specific. All of our job descriptions. It's across our community improvement plan.
Okay.
And we just don't have a staffed position anymore for DEI.
We're using Kelsey, or working with Kelsey Hubler with the whole county. She sits on our Thrive initiative, and she makes sure that we're focusing on equity, especially with substance use prevention. She's on that specific team. I think we can always improve, and we can always do better.
Mm-hmm.
Our strategic planning is going on right now, and you know, we can always weave equity throughout that.
Yes.
And our Thrive initiatives, we're weaving that throughout that.
Our
county
DEI position did not exist when we used the objective for Kirsten. But in the meantime, we have a county DEI focus now. So because we so lacked in perinatal mental health, we chose to try that objective, and it's already really been extremely successful.
Yeah. And Megan's definitely shining, and that is an absolute need. When we think about DEI and how it's being shattered across the nation, I often hear it's embedded throughout, but very rare do I hear how and how it is infiltrating systemic issues, which compound the issues we're out in the world, in the community serving, whether it's addiction. And, you know, I don't know what that data is tied to, but when I look at, you know, bar graphs and all of that, these are a lot of systemic things. You know, when we think about shame and stigma, we got public, we got self, and we got systemic. And so that is the basis of me inquiring a little bit more about it. And again, I think this ties back into our last meeting of, okay, well, we're an advisory, and, you know, we have the conversation, what are we advising and all of that. So it kind of piggybacks on that. And so please always let me know if I'm stretching my role too far, but I do understand the value of DEIJB as it relates to health across the board. And I know the other person was here, and she was really uncovering a lot of stuff, and that was not taken well when it comes to who you give your report to.
Yes.
You know, so that made that trigger that of like, oh, you're giving your report to that. So I wonder, where did that piece go? It kind of just fell off. And often it gets consumed by another role and spread thin across. And so it's a passion of mine. That's why I kept us there for a few more seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Jennifer, do we have a court counsel report?
I don't have anything new.
Is there any other business as allowed by law?
I think. Have you always said that?
I think.
I've never done this before.
It's like, I'm making it up as I go.
The minutes, though, because I think we have.
Oh, do we have a quorum now? Oh,
yes, we do.
Okay, so I have a motion to approve the minutes of March 12th, 2024.
So moved.
Second.
And then what about closing board comments? Anyone? Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
A second.
We're talking more.
Yeah, that's good.